Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's featured interview for February 2019. My name is Jessica Rios and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light. And this is one of our free monthly recordings to support you, our listeners, to lean into light, to choose love over fear, over and over and over and over again, because that's part of what life looks like for us humans. So thanks so much for being here and giving yourself this time to make your life more how you want it. This is one of the gifts we give at Leaning Into Light to support humanity. So grab a pen, and if you need to, you can pause the recording, you can take notes and take your learning to the next level by having notes to refer to and take steps along the lines of this call. This call is on individuals' experience, so the experience of individuals during the Valentine's season. So this is our first call, and it's on individuals, and we'll actually be doing another one for February, which is for couples. And the purpose of this call is this. Our cultural ideas around Valentine's Day mean different things to different people in relationship compared to people who are not in relationship. So we are going to discuss some of those differences in conversation with Charles Zook, our resident rock star relationship coach here at Leaning Into Light. We're so grateful for Charles. And our hope is that wherever we find ourselves or aspire to become, we can find love and support for our community. So I want to take a moment to say welcome to Charles Zook. Hello, Charles.
Welcome. So glad to be here. Always fun to talk with you and love sharing ideas that are helpful with your audience.
Awesome. So a little background on you, Charles, just a quick bio. Charles Zook is a masterful relationship coach with over 15 years of experience coaching diverse couples from around the globe. His website is charleszook.com. That's Charles, Z-O-O-K.com. You can reach him through that website. And we met because 15 years ago, I really needed help in my marriage. And I called one of the top coaching schools in the world. And I said, can I have the names of three of your very top coaches? And they gave me you, Charles. So every day for the last 15 years, I've been grateful for that. So thanks again for being here.
My honor, my pleasure. Love doing it every day. So very excited about what we're doing today.
Yay, and it does show that you love doing it. We work together a lot, and I hear that in pretty much every word you speak. So let's dive into our interview on individuals. Oh, so it's Valentine's month. It's Valentine's season. And for some people, Valentine's Day is romantic and wonderful. And for a lot of people, it's more like an ouch. It hurts. It's disappointing. Some people are not in a great relationship, or they're not in a relationship at all. And it can actually be a depressing time for a lot of people. So what did you see people struggling with as far as individuals at this time?
Well, there's so many cultural messages that of how we're supposed to look. If we're happy, we're supposed to, have a certain dress. We're supposed to have the car. We're supposed to be interesting. We're supposed to have interesting jobs. And a big message is that this, surrounds largely being in relationship. And when we are looking at the cultural messages, especially that are hit so hard in particular around Valentine's Day, we can compare ourselves to these images, which are largely commercial images for the purpose of getting us to buy stuff. And we can realize, wow, I don't really look like that. Maybe I'm in a relationship, but it's not going so well. And we're going to be talking more about that on our other recording. But if I'm not in relationship, Valentine's Day, like you said, ouch, it's not really very fun or comforting as we compare ourselves to the images that are there. For people who are not in relationship, I mean, very simply, there are some people who are not in relationship and they would like to be in relationship. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And there also are people that are not in relationship and they really don't want to be in relationship. Maybe not right now, maybe not ever. And where do they fit into all of this? So we're going to be talking a little bit about that also. So I'm very excited about addressing both of those with you.
Oh, and I'm so excited that you can address those with such a high skill level, because individuals in those categories don't get a lot of attention around Valentine's Day. So yay, we're here to, I feel like suddenly I'm like a penguin splashing in the water with excitement that we get to love these
yes.
people. Yeah.
Yes, this is part of the diversity of February. Is there's a very small sector that are like, oh boy, that's just like me, and I want to get the card and the special dinner and you know all that, and but for the vast majority of people, they don't look like that. So I'm thrilled that we are honoring the spectrum of experience in February rather than just the most popular.
Yes. So for people who aren't in relationship and don't want to be, is that mm-hmm. a struggle?
It's a big struggle in our culture because that is seen as not being as successful, not being as cool, not being as popular. All the imagery is around typically, until very recently, a heterosexual same race couple. There are our, you know, stereotypical images we've had from the past. It's diversifying somewhat recently, yay. But there is this idea that if I'm in relationship, I'm cool, I'm successful. If I'm not in relationship, it's somehow something that has to be fixed. And for some people, they don't have the motivation. They, in some cases, they've tried relationship and they have found it to be either not workable for them, not really, there is legitimately a substantial amount of effort that goes into having a functional relationship. And for some people, they might be willing to put the effort in, but they don't see the functional, they don't see the fun, they don't see the return on investment. And for some people, they just don't, it isn't that fulfilling. They don't really want that. So we're trying to get beyond what the culture says we should have and really dig into each of us as individuals. What's my vision for my life? What are my values? What makes me happy? And to really tell the truth with ourselves and each other and allow for a diversity that includes a variety of relationship statuses rather than we have to be in relationship to be acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it can be a struggle, you're saying, based on what mm-hmm. the culture can put on us, and yep. it doesn't have to be. You have a lot of research in your toolkit as far as, mm-hmm. This stuff is concerned. Can you share any with us about that in this realm?
Well, I mean, underneath the surface of what we're talking about is basically what makes somebody happy. And if you go to the cultural commercial view, what makes us happy is to be in a classic relationship. And but the research doesn't really support that. Specifically, I'm referring to the long-term Harvard study, which is specifically for the purpose of long-term happiness. And I was listening to one of the lead researchers. They've had three generations of researchers monitoring this project. It's been going on for 80 years now. And, the participants that are still alive are in their 90s. So it's been a long thing. And they're looking into what can we derive from this long-term study in terms of what can people do to find happiness in life? And according to the Harvard study, they are finding that relationship, not necessarily a monogamous, married relationship, but relationships that are functional and fulfilling are something that they find highly correlated with people who report that their lives are happy and fulfilling. So if we look at this more broadly, and especially in terms of the study, these are people that are in relationships. It could be a marriage. It could be family. It could be neighborhood. It could be church. It could be volunteerism. It isn't so important what the flavor is. what's important is that it is a relationship, and the quality of this is that people, I feel like these people care about me, and I care about these people. That quality seems to be the bottom line on, if I've got that in my life, if I've got people that I care about and they care about me, people tend to report I'm happy, happier, on the happy side. And if I don't have that, and there are people that are married that don't have that. Mm-hmm. So it isn't that married is the best version of this or married is the solution to this, because there are lots of people that are married that don't think they're in a relationship that I care about the other person cares about me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know,
over time, that basic element of why we want to be in relationship a lot of the time is because we want to feel cared for and we want to show our care for other people. Over time, that can really go away. And it's, it's a sad place to be.
Well, even, you know, kind of foundationally to your insightful comment, our culture, I mean, the information you and I are discussing right here, it's not like everybody's heard this over and over again through grammar school and high school and college and in the sitcoms and TVs and YouTube. Oh, really? Caring, fulfilling relationships? That's what makes happiness? That's not what we're told. We're told, if you're not happy, what should you do? You should buy something, you know, buy a prescription medication or buy something at Amazon or buy a car or, you know, spend money to have a sexier body. You know, these things are what make you happy. But these commercially driven cultural messages are not really what constitute people reporting that after I bought that stuff or, you know, did those things, then I actually reported being happy. Actually, that kind of thinking as a solution results in people feeling unfulfilled ongoingly and depressed about, oh, I've done what the culture, I have the job, I'm making the money, I'm buying the stuff, I have the house, you know, I'm not happy. What do I do? And culturally, there aren't a lot of answers out there. So I don't think it's so much that it is a natural outcome of time and relationship that these things kind of, you know, fizzle. I think it's a lack of cultural support educationally and in terms of the models that we have. We don't really aspire to the kinds of actions that it would take for me to feel like somebody cares about me. For me to feel like somebody cares about me, I'm going to have to share what's really going on with me. Men and women in different ways have been enculturated not to really share what we're really feeling, probably men in particular. It's hard for somebody to care about me if I can't tell you what I'm feeling or what's going on with me, and men have a lot of restrictions against that, women in different ways themselves also. And caring for someone else, I mean, all the emphasis in our cultures, Netflix, and occupy your time with these things, social media. The research shows the more time we spend online social media, the more depressed. It's a very clear correlation. You spend a little bit of time, you're less depressed. You spend more time, medium, a lot of time, you're more depressed.
So it's wild.
Yeah. And it's not the message we're getting. The message that we're getting is, you know, from the Facebooks and the Instagrams is that, hey, you want to be more popular, you want to have more friends, you want to have more people following you, be interesting, post interesting things, get really upset about things or paint a picture of your life as being really super interesting and happy. And that's how we get happy. But, you know, physiologically, that's not really what happens. We need human to human contact in order to really be happy. And that's not going to get replaced with the screen.
Yeah, you know, I want to share a little story from my life and how this has shown up, because actually relationship is the most important thing in my life. And I'm 43, and for as long as I can remember, that's been kind of weird. Like, I'm not the norm in that regard. And I haven't felt weird. I think it's very natural. However, what happened was, at a very young age, I was in a Catholic school and in a Christian church community, and I just decided love is my religion. I'm not a religious person. I don't want that. I want love to be my religion. And my parents were cool with it, which is wonderful. And I express that through relationships. So my lifelong art, you know, has been letter writing, and I do it in person a lot. I'm a very loving person as best as I can be. And a lot of letters have been written over the years to build relationships, to send people a little piece of my day with my handwriting and a stamp in their mailbox that tells them, I love you. You're wonderful. Here's the gift. Here are the gifts you've given me. I'm so grateful for you in my life, etc. And people really, really appreciate it. And I've actually gotten, you know, had friendships that have really been maintained primarily through this letter writing. And yep. So relationships are, you know, my thing, and they always have been. And yet, and so would I look back now and say I've been happy all my life? No. Have I had a generally happy life? Yes. With big challenges, because that's part of the human experience, in my experience, and generally happy. And yet recently I have had conversations with two beautiful men in my life, a friend and a family member, who serve on suicide hotlines. And I have realized that, you know, I've actually never been suicidal. However, I have been depressed, and I can really empathize with people who are suicidal to my own degree. And I really noticed that for me, the reason I don't go to that extreme is because I love people so much and they love me. My relationships keep me here.
Yes. Yep.
So, yeah.
That's actually very consistent. I did volunteer work with a suicide prevention hotline for 6 years, and that is actually the most common thing that makes a difference between somebody committing suicide or not. Hmm. They will report, the reason I didn't is that there were someone or someones that they actually felt cared about them.
Hmm.
That was the thing. You know, it wasn't the, you know, oh, everything's working out. It's like, you know, that person actually talked to me, spent time with me, demonstrated that it wasn't just, you know, call me if you're having problems. It's like, no, I care. I want to talk with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, so beautiful.
Mm. Charles, for other people who don't want to sit down and write a letter every day, or five, or, you know, that's not their thing, what are some other examples of how, you know, of relationships?
Well, we want to find some type of community. And in a time gone by, a lot of people would find this in a spiritual church community. And and there are definitely pros and cons to that being a major cultural feature. The downside, such as you referred to, would be a difference between the, for instance, the Catholic Church and your own values and vision, and you came to your own conclusions. But when you struck out on your own, rather than kind of adopting the Catholic Church as your church family, you struck out on your own. And what you've had to do is create your own community, because it wasn't like built in the way it would be if you just joined this church community and went every Sunday and Wednesday night, or what, you know, whenever it is that you go to this church community. So you've had to be creative, because it was no longer cooked in to your life the way it would be if you had a church community and went there once a week or twice a week or every day or whatever you do. So in the world we live in, we don't really have those kind of built-in communities. And so it does create a opportunity, but also it's not going to happen. It's a challenge. It's not going to happen unless we take some artistic control, which again is not culturally encouraged. Now, the cultural encouragement is things that are commercially viable rather than actually contribute to our happiness as human beings. So we're going to have to be creative. And you know, for instance, I have found a community, we play pickleball. If you don't know what pickleball is, you can go on YouTube and put in pickleball and you'll see people. It's basically kind of a baby version of tennis. It's a lot of fun. It's very easy on the body and can be played very, recreationally for fun with grandparents and grandchildren together. And, it can also be played very competitively if that's what you want. And you know, in various communities, these people meet daily or several times a week or once a week or whatever it is. And hey, good to see you, Charles. Hey, you know, oh, how's the knee doing? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know, let's see if we can help you out with that. You know, we'll try to hit them to you. And it's a sense that these people care about me and I care about them. You know, if I don't show up, it's like, hey, Charles, where you been? We haven't seen you for a couple of days. What's going on? So each of us, if we really want to be happy, we cannot kind of delegate that out to the culture. Hey, I'm going to do what you say and I hope I'm happy. The culture doesn't care if you're happy. All they want is your money. So we're going to have to, if we want to be happy, we're going to have to take that on as artists of our life. What is it that speaks to me? Is it volunteerism? You know, is it some type of a spiritual community? Is it an activity community? You know, we swim together or, you know, whatever it is, but it's got to get in more so than just I show up to gym. Hey, how you doing? You know, it's we really care about each other, and this is the challenge to create. But really, not only does whoever it is that you are listening to this, not only do you want this, but the human beings around you want it too. And if you start taking steps towards discovering that, there are going to be other people that are going to go, oh, I wanted that too. I just didn't know what to do. Yeah, let's have that. Let's care about each other. And it's going to involve being real. If you want people to care about you, you got to let them know what's really going on. You've got to find the people that it's safe to do that with. It's not safe to do it with everyone. Some people will hurt you and criticize you. But there are people that you can trust, and we need to find those people and develop that caring relationship.
So you mentioned that, you know, as far as developing that caring relationship, you mentioned, and I just want to share them again because this isn't the cultural norm. So we want to be as helpful as possible for our listeners and put this out again. So as far as being happy is concerned, Harvard has done a study, a long-term study on what makes people happy, and having relationships, having significant relationships where you feel like somebody cares about you and you care for them. That's a big, the central piece in what leads to people being happy. So examples of those, Charles, you shared a spiritual connection, somebody with a spiritual connection, could be a hobby that you do, quilting or yoga or soccer, could be volunteering, could be a weekly cafe date, meeting somebody for coffee and chatting about what's up for you. Could be something in your neighborhood or extended family, or if you're religious, it could be a church affiliation. So lots of good examples. How would people know if their relationship that they're speaking of that's, you know, is healthy and fulfilling?
Well, there's a way that we each kind of intuitively know. The metaphor that seems to work for people is to think of it in terms of sometimes when I'm around a certain person, I feel like my batteries are getting charged. I feel, you know, kind of nourished. I feel better about myself. I have more energy. I look forward to seeing them again because I just feel better, you know, when I'm around them and after I'm around them. And then there are some relationships that discharge our batteries. You know, we get around them, it's kind of sucking all the energy out of me, and you know, I'm tired, and I don't really look forward to it again, and I've got to go and rest after I have this interaction because I'm kind of worn out from it. And so we want to listen to that. That's our bodies telling us what relationships are actually fulfilling us and what relationships are actually dragging us down. It doesn't mean there's not a give and take. I mean, when we are with people that we care about, there are times when I am going to make a sacrifice for what's sacred, and I am going to be helpful for you. I'm going to be there for you. And that's not for me. That's for you. There's a way that can be fulfilling too. But there is this sense of reciprocation. It's not just all about you, and I'm always helping you, and it's always about you. You know, and if we're in a situation of, I mean, we did mention volunteerism, and the critical element here would be that in the volunteerism, not only are you giving, but you're receiving. And that in a well-structured volunteer program, the volunteers will feel appreciated by the people who are organizing it, and frequently they will feel very appreciated by the people that they are helping through their volunteerism. So we want to make sure that it's a charging of the battery rather than a discharging of the battery overall. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And it's even possible. I'm thinking of a book I'm almost done reading right now called When Strangers Meet, and it's by Keo Stark. And she gave a TED Talk and then put the book into a longer version because it was very popular. But it's really, really sweet elaboration on what happens when we interact with strangers. And so actually what can happen. Actually, what you're talking about, Charles, in terms of having a sense of mutually caring, you can do that in 5 seconds with somebody. And this book, yep. When Strangers Meet, is real sweet. And I just want to mention a blog post I wrote a year or two ago called Learning to Talk to Strangers. So again, that's going to be on my blog at leaningintolight.com, Learning to Talk to Strangers. And it came from having a young daughter and realizing, oh, wait a minute. I teach from love. I parent from love, not from fear. So, wow, all those times I heard don't talk to strangers, that was a lot of fear. And that's not what I want to teach her. So Learning to Talk to Strangers, listeners, you can check that out if you have a moment. And then again, the book When Strangers Meet by Keo Stark. And if this is all you can listen to, I hope you'll stay on. But just to share for a moment, if you want to find out more about Charles, find out more about his relationship coaching or wisdom or anything like that, you can go to charleszook.com. So Charles, for those people who are not in relationship and want a relationship to be happy in life, what's the most effective, healthy way for them to go about that?
Well, the idea of I want to be in relationship with someone else is a time-honored spiritual practice that this is, you know, I'm going to feel complete. I just want it. You know, it's so true that it doesn't even, like, I thought about it and I was thinking about this and this and I came to the conclusion. For some of us, it's just true that we feel like being in a beloved relationship would be fulfilling for us. There's a poet, Rumi, R-U-M-I, 12th century Sufi poet, and he writes beautiful things about this longing to have this, you know, connection. It's often difficult to tell if he's speaking about a connection with the divine or a connection with his beloved or if these are actually one and the same. And there is something interconnected about our connection with the divine, our connection with our beloved.
Yes.
And the path to finding our beloved is a spiritual path, can be if we approach it that way. And once we find that person, the practice of being in conscious relationship can also be a very powerful spiritual path. So I have had a lot of clients over the years who, in talking with them about what they want to create in their life, what their vision is for their life, there have been a fair number of them who said, well, one of the things I'd really like to create, I haven't had much success so far, I'd like to create having a really fulfilling relationship with my beloved, and how do I go about that? So that's something that I've done many times, and I have suggestions about that.
Awesome. So will you say more about getting clear about their goal with the relationship, what they're looking for, more about that piece and about pursuing it?
Sure. So the first thing, if there's something that we have a vision for in our life, we want to tell the truth about it. And in this case, there's a clear goal that I would like to find my beloved. So we want to tell the truth about that. So I would have the person I'm talking to describe in detail the words that would describe the person they'd like to be with. Everybody has this. It's a truth inside. You don't have to do research. You don't have to go ask the internet. It's truth. You know, if I just ask someone, describe to me the person you'd like to be with, and they say, oh, this and this and this and this and this and this. And so I think of this as metaphorically as a jigsaw puzzle. And if you want to complete an important or especially a complicated jigsaw puzzle, every piece is important. So we want to get as many pieces as possible to kind of clarify this vision of who it is I'm looking for. So this would include, physical qualities, spiritual qualities, emotional qualities, age range, how they are with profession and finances and It would definitely include the whole arena of sexuality. We live in a culture where it's very sexualized, but it's kind of sexualized at the kind of middle school level of, you know, it's very salacious and immature, but we really don't have mature conversations. For some reason, it's much easier to have sex than it is for us to talk about sex. That would be so crazy in so many other disciplines that, like, well, I don't know how to talk about flying a plane, but I can just wing it. I can do it. And so we want to talk about our, you know, sexual preferences, our sexual history. You know, what is it we like? In our other recording that we're going to be doing, one of the main things we'll be talking about is this very strong difference that in every couple, and I actually am saying every couple has a difference in their sexual preferences of what they want to do, how frequently they want to do it, how long they want to do it, what they want to do. Nobody has an equal sign with their partner. So if we are wildly different, one person wants to have sex once a day, one person wants to have sex once a month, that's going to be a problem. So if we can actually tell the truth about what I'm looking for in all these different dimensions in a partner and just tell the truth and tell the truth and tell the truth, I will have my clients work on this and then they get it to me and then I look it over with them and ask them questions. But I want to get to the point that I can actually, like, I could tell if somebody was this person or not. There's enough information that it becomes kind of a checkpoint on is somebody like this or not.
So an exhaustive list, you mentioned, you know, really in detail and the sexual piece, you're, you know, very clear about all the, as much detail as you can get to their sexual preferences, financial status, emotionally, what are they like, physically, what are they like, spiritually, age, all of it, really, really detailed. Yep. So they make this big list, then what?
So, I do want to mention that we're kind of moving away from the Newtonian idea that I have to pick from what's available. Like, oh, here's somebody that I met. Are they better than I've had before? Are they better than anybody else I know? I guess they're kind of the best that's going. Maybe I'll go with them. We're moving away from picking from what's available, and we're moving into more of a spiritual or a quantum physics approach of this is possibility. What is the possibility I want to create?
Awesome. Good. Love it.
Good. So we make this, we get it to the point where we feel like it is exhaustive. This list I will mention is for this person's eyes only. Share with a confidential coach or a good friend that will keep it confidential. There's no benefit, and it can be very bad to share this, for instance, with someone you're dating, because you're basically spelling out what it is you're looking for. And in our culture, dating has a kind of deceptive quality. When we go on our first date, we don't dress the way we normally dress. We dress up because we want to make a good impression on our first date. We wouldn't want somebody to see how we normally dress. Well, there's this deception of I can't act the way I normally act because then you wouldn't like me, so I got to put on a pretend show so maybe you'll like my pretend show. We do not want this information getting out to anyone at any time. Even after you're engaged, just burn it up. You know, it's done its job. So, all right, so we have this list, and now we want to recognize, and I would finish this step before I go to the next one that I'm going to tell you right now. The next step is we realize that all of these things are not of equal importance. Some of these things are much more important than others, and so we're going to go through with every item that we have put on this list, and we are going to have three categories of how we weight them, and the three categories are non-negotiable. Second one is important but negotiable. And the last one is, wouldn't it be nice? Now, we might say, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, this list is so long. Why do I even want to add? This is impossible. We're looking for perfect. No, by putting these weightings in, we are realizing that some of them are actually critically important. Some of them are like, well, it's what I prefer, but I could talk about it. And some of them are like, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful if we both like pickleball or something like that? But if the person was everything else but didn't like pickleball, it isn't like I'm not going to continue dating them unless I said that was non-negotiable. So this brings reality into the work that we're doing because all things are not equal. Any questions on that?
Nope. Sounds wonderful. Okay. And I've never heard that before and I love it.
Good.
Very helpful.
What we've done so far, I would say, is a very important prerequisite before we go out dating. No, what do you mean? Can't I just go on a date? You can go on a date and have fun, but you're in danger. You're in danger that somebody's just going to happen to come along that seems like a good idea without much consciousness in it. The work we're doing is telling the truth. It's building consciousness about what you actually want that would make you happy. Now that you've done this work, this soul searching, this truth telling, now you're ready to go out in the world. So what I would recommend with the list is that this be reviewed on a daily basis, that you get this out on a daily basis. 3 to 5 minutes is plenty. You look it over and you're imagining this person. And maybe you're adding a few more words, or maybe you're revising some words, or maybe you're thinking of something else. Maybe you think about, oh, there's this couple. I wish I was like them. Well, what do I like about that couple? Oh, well, add that. Oh, there's this couple. Oh, I hate to be like that. Well, what do you hate about that? Well, if that's what you hate, what is it you want? Add that to the list. But I want the person who's working on this to be percolating. I want them to be soaking in the hot tub of this information. Imagining. I want you to actually feel this person. I want you to miss them. My wife's name is Sandy, and when she's not around, I miss her. This is your beloved. I want you to read this list, and I want you to long for and miss this person. You want to find them. These are strong feelings, but these are the strong feelings that attract your beloved to you. So now we go out into the world, and this list that we've made will protect you, because if you meet somebody and they don't fulfill this list in important ways, you'll go, nice being a friend with you, but I really don't want to date you or be in relationship with you or have sex with you because you're not the kind of person I really would want to spend the rest of my life with, because I've told the truth about the kind of person I'd like to spend my life with, and you're not that. So what happens commonly is we go out there and we'll meet somebody and they're partial. I'm just going to say 50% just for conversation's sake. You know, some of the things they fulfill, but some of the things they don't. And if you go in relationship with that person, what you are doing is you are saying to yourself, I want to find out what happens when I'm in relationship with somebody who's about half of what I'm looking for. I wonder how that's going to go. And you'll learn very powerful things about what it's like to be in relationship with someone who's about 50% of what you're looking for. Or you could say no thank you to what you don't want to make room for what you do want. Say no thank you. And what I've seen, I can't explain the mechanism, but what I've seen is that pretty soon here comes 60%. If you want to stop there, you can. What's it like to be in a relationship with somebody who's 60% of what I want? Or you can say no thank you, 70%, 80%, 90%. As this goes forward, it gets down to there's somebody, it's just, you know, oh, they're so wonderful, they're this, they're this, they're this. And then I'll ask, so how do they not match up with your profile that you've created? And they'll say, oh, well, this is one or two things. And it's like, well, people that get divorces, it's usually one or two things. So what is the one or two things? And, you know, let's just say that, you know, the one thing is, well, you know, this person doesn't really live a healthy lifestyle and doesn't really exercise, and they want to just stay at home and watch TV all the time, but everything else is wonderful. Okay, well, if you are walking in with your eyes open, you cannot be surprised if a year from now, 10 years from now, 35 years from now, that's a great relationship, but that person doesn't want to get off the couch. They, you know, it's like, well, you knew that going in. You declared that you wanted to be in a relationship with someone who you knew did not want to, you know, have a, you know, kind of exertful lifestyle. And you get to have that spiritual experience of what's it like to be in a relationship with someone like that. If you don't want to be in a relationship with someone like that, you have to say no thank you. And what commonly happens, I mean, without exception that I can think of, someone comes along that is, you're going to be that picky, the universe is going to find you that person, but it takes being that picky.
Yeah, you know, as you paint this picture, I want to acknowledge all the people who have found the courage and the trust that it takes they've found the place inside themselves that has so much self-worth, or maybe it's craziness because they just don't know, is this really going to happen? I just have never heard that this really, is this really going to happen for me? They found the self-worth to not accept 90%, and they've let go of 90%, and they've received that 100%, because really it's, that's a tricky moment. You know,
I
really want to acknowledge people for letting yourself have what you really want.
It's a relationship with truth. And, you know, that's a lot of what I do in my coaching is, you know, that someone meets somebody who's the back to the 50% part of the story. It's like, well, is that the kind of person you really want to be in relationship? Well, you know, they say they're going to change and grow. And it's like, okay, well, they might, but they might not. You know, the research shows that 70% of challenges in relationship are stable over time. So if I'm talking with a couple and one of them wants to spend a whole bunch of money, the other one wants to save a whole bunch of money, 5 years later, probably still an issue. Mm-hmm. Maybe they found some kind of way to work it out. But it isn't like it's gone. You know, the sex thing we talked about, those kinds of differences tend to be stable over time. I want to spend more time with you. I want some more time to myself. Stable over time. Mm-hmm. And when I actually say, is this the kind of person you really want to be in relationship? And we're going to be talking about this next year and the year after that. So it's a choice. It's not this idea of I'm going to marry you and you're going to be different and grow and change. Now, if you want to be with somebody, using that last metaphor that we said about the person who's not active, if you want to be in relationship with someone's active and you're marrying someone who's not active with the idea that they're going to get active, you're not in love with that person. You don't love them. You love them if they were different. That's not love.
Yeah, you're really breaking down the, you know, it's gotten cliche at this point, and I think cliches get that way usually for good reason. You can't change somebody else. And we've all heard that and we all kind of know it, yet I've personally gotten into a relationship 15 years ago or so where I thought, gosh, this person just doesn't really feel loved on a deep down level. If there's anybody who can fix that, it's me. I didn't say that out loud, but it's where I was coming from. So I just want to back up and capture that recipe that you shared in a few words. Number one, so if you're wanting to get into a relationship and, you know, you're an individual and you want a relationship to be happy in life, that's really something you want. The first one is create a list in detail of what you're looking for. The second one is label every item on your list non-negotiable, important but negotiable, or wouldn't it be nice? Those are the three. And the third one is go out into the world to find that person. And I just want to share a piece on that, a little kind of elaboration on the flavor of that last one about going out into the world. I've been somebody who, not in looking for a partner, because that's not the place that most of my challenges have shown up, but I've been somebody who, when I've been looking for paid work that matches my lifestyle, I have actually created a disease, a neurological disorder, migraines, from the excessively hard, effortful work I put in to trying to create something and trying to figure out why it wasn't happening and, you know, all that. And so I just, for the people who are looking for a partner, a relationship, when you go out into the world, you know, it's, there's a fine dance between going out and looking for it and finding it and, you know, being in the places where that person might show up, really putting your action behind your vision of what you want and not being in a place of lack, not, you know, being in a place of trust, being actually able to let go. And I will say that I've, you know, I'm married and I created a very detailed list of what I wanted. Every single thing on that list showed up in my husband. Every single thing sharpens my knives, loves children, you know, a sailor. I mean, kind of crazy, like how detailed I got and how everything walked in the door. And it happened in a moment when I totally let go. I was having sushi and he walked into the restaurant and my whole body knew. It was like, oh my God, that's that person. So I just really want to encourage people to have that, a space in that dance, be in that dance of going out and then letting go, enjoying your life, not being fixated all the time on it. Anything you want to share about that, Charles?
I love everything you said. And then just a little bit there's a spiritual practice. I mean, like when I'm away from Sandy, I'm kind of fixated on I miss her. But you know, it's like, it's not all I think about. It's like, you know, I get other things done too. It's not like I'm paralyzed until she gets home, but there is a kind of pulsing importance to finding my beloved, getting back with my beloved, that I think that hunger, that loneliness, that broken heart that wants to be connected with that person, I want you to feel that. And but not with that kind of scarcity that you are cautioning us of, that I'm going to go with somebody who's not really a good choice for me, because that's as probably as good as I deserve. And this all comes out with rigorous relationship with truth. Another thing that I would kind of stick in here is that when we make this list, this list will be very spoken from our vision for our life, our values in our life. And this truth about the person I want to be with starts speaking to me that if I want somebody who is active and doesn't sit around on the couch all the time, well, if I'm sitting around on the couch all the time, maybe I'm talking a little bit to myself about, you know, if I want to be with somebody who's active, maybe I need to get a little active. And then I'm having this relationship with my beloved, haven't met the person yet, but it says right here, I want the person to be active, not a couch potato. Well, maybe I need to be active. My beloved is already growing me, challenging me. I haven't even met the person yet, but my beloved is challenging me to get off the couch and go out and live life. And I start letting my beloved love me. And guess what? I get off the couch, I go out and live life, and not a huge surprise, I didn't meet my beloved on my couch. I met my beloved when I got out there and started living my life the way I wanted my beloved to be. Who am I going to be in that kind of relationship with my beloved? These kinds of spiritual growths and insights can be steps on the way to finding our beloved.
Wonderful. So, Charles, I've heard you say something about strength of weak connections, and I'd love to hear a little about how that plays into this topic.
Great. There's a common question. Do I need to go online dating? And about 50% of the people I've worked with did do online dating, about 50% didn't. Whether we are doing online dating, you know, there's kind of a pool of people there, and there's mechanisms for how to meet these people, and then some of them we talk with and we text, and eventually maybe we go to coffee. If we're going to do online dating, really any kind of dating, we need to realize there's a lot of deception. We need to realize that's just the culture we live in, that people are not being forthcoming about how they look or their age or they're presenting themselves. Going on a first date, I got to dress up. Putting my profile on, what's the best thing I could possibly say about myself? So we have to realize that's just the truth. And if we are interested in getting to know someone, well, these kinds of presentations are hard to keep up over time. So dating is kind of like, you know, interviewing for a job. You know, you're kind of having second interviews or third interviews. It's like, it's not that dry as a professional interview, but it's the same purpose. I want to get to know you. And what do you really like? What do you really dress like when you're not on a first date? What do you really like to do? So for people that don't want to do online dating, there's a challenge of you can't stay home and wait for somebody to knock on your door. You've got to percolate. You got to get out there and interact. So in both of these cases, we have the idea of the strength of weak connections. We are familiar with the strength of strong connections. I know my neighbors next door. I know the people I work with. I know the people at the coffee shop I go to. I know my family. And, you know, those are strong connections. Well, I've kind of already been through those people, and I don't want to marry any of them. Well, all of these people know people. And, you know, and then when we go places, it's like you're at the coffee shop. That coffee shop is filled with people. Maybe you look around the coffee shop and go, nah, there really isn't anybody here I would be interested in. But all of those people know people that know people that know people. And networking, whether we are looking for a job, 85% of jobs are found through networking, only 2% are found through resumes. Or whether we're talking about relationship, research shows that this connection, this network, is how we find the person that we want to be in relationship with, or commonly someone that knows somebody at work, somebody that knows somebody in our family. Now, and then there's places we go and we meet people. If I highly recommend the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, classic, the 101 on human interaction, which can be summarized. I still recommend reading it, but, and don't just read it in one weekend or one week, you know, read a chapter a week, let it sink in. And, you know, but the bottom line of the book is we are taught that how to be successful with other human beings is to be interesting. Wear interesting clothes, say interesting things, have an interesting job, drive an interesting car. And, but people don't really care. What people really respond to is someone who is interested. Be interested, be curious. And that book will help you develop the skill sets that allow you to interact with people. And how do I come across as interested? And so if you're at a party or standing in line at the grocery store, strike up a conversation with the person in front of you or behind you. Practice talking to people. The person may or may not look like somebody you want to get married to, but practice talking to people. When you go out, be open and energetic. Be safe, but you know, don't put your headset in and your sunglasses on and stare at your phone. You know, nobody's going to interact with that. You know, eyes up, interact with people. And this person that you talk to in the line at the grocery store, if they're a wonderful person, maybe you want to have coffee with them because they have a son or a daughter or a neighbor next door, somebody that would love to meet you. Yeah. This, it's not a complete answer, but is it kind of giving you what you want, Jess? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking about, you know, you're mentioning running into people in the grocery store, and we talked about the places where we can meet people and how we can build relationships through hobbies or, you know, at a cafe. So you mentioned, Charles, that about half of people do in-person physical, you know, dating and half do online dating. Anything you can say specifically that might be helpful to people who choose online dating?
There's a couple of factors here. One is, as human beings, research shows us we tend to be creatures of habit. So, using myself as an example, I spent a lot of my life basically being a knight in shining armor looking for a damsel in distress. And I would find a damsel in distress, and I'm going to be the knight in shining armor and save this damsel in distress. And it didn't work out so well because damsels in distress really don't want to be out of distress. They kind of just are in distress, and I'm overgeneralizing. But, you know, and I had a tendency to seek out damsels in distress because I wanted to be useful and appreciated that I could be helpful and all that, because that's how I was raised or something. So it can be good to get out of our repetition in terms of, so maybe when you're, if you're online dating, you know, look beyond what you normally look for. And about half of the people that share with me, oh, Charles, I met the person. About half of those, they walked into the room and they went, oh, you're the person. You know, like you said about your beloved, Jess, you know, mm-hmm. walked in the restaurant and I knew, I felt it. About half of them say that, and about half of them it's like, yeah, you're not really the kind of person I would be interested in, but I'll have a coffee. And it's like, oh, that went really well. Maybe we have another coffee. Oh, well, that went really well. Let's go for a hike. And they kind of warmed up to, you're not normally the kind of person that I would go out with, but as I actually gave it a chance, I kind of fell in love with you.
The universe opened their doors, opened their eyes.
Right. Well, and I mean, when I met Sandy, the first thing that came into my head is there's no way I'm going to talk to her. And when she saw me, the first time she saw me, what went through her head is no way I'm going to talk with him. And the only reason we wound up talking is we were in a communication seminar where it was logistically set up that we had to talk to each other. She actually picked me as the last person in a room of 80. As the last person in the room I would ever want to talk to. I was the last person she would ever want to talk to.
She had no idea at that point.
Right. And so, and she was completely different from women I had dated before. She definitely was not a damsel in distress. Yeah. You know, knights in shining armor need not apply. And I was like, oh, I got nothing. But we've been in a great relationship for, you know, 15, 17 years, something like that. Can't keep count anymore.
Yep. Charles, you mentioned in the spirit of curiosity, you mentioned how what people want is somebody who's interested in them. What are some examples of open-ended questions that, you know, to give people a little bit of a feel of what that might be like?
Good. So to just briefly address the other, it's like, oh, I love rock concerts. Do you love rock concerts? We know what the right answer is. The right answer is, oh, yeah, I love rock concerts, too. I guess I better start liking rock concerts because this person loves rock concerts, so I better love rock concerts. We want to – we all know what a good date is. A good date is it went well and we're going to have another date. We all know what a bad date is. We got together and nothing really happened. We're not going to see each other again. It's a failure. That's a horrible situation to put ourselves in. That this person who I'm just meeting to see what they're like is somehow going to address my self-worth. So when we meet with these people, we don't want to be, you know, kind of give away the information in terms of what it is that we want them to answer. We want to ask what you referenced, open-ended questions. One example that I like is, hey, if you had a weekend that you could do anything you wanted to do, what would be a really fun weekend for you? And if they say, oh, I love going to NASCAR. Man, NASCAR is my most favorite thing. It's like, well, you get to decide whether you want to spend your weekends at NASCAR or whether you want to spend your weekends with somebody who's gone to NASCAR or not. I really don't want to be in a relationship with somebody who's in a NASCAR. But you're now getting some real information, and by asking these open-ended questions, you're not giving away what the right answer is, because as human beings, we want to be accepted. We want to say the thing that people will accept us. We don't want to say the thing that has them no longer want to talk to us, but that has us be deceptive.
Yeah. Super. So I just want to, you know, we got to move to a close here. And I've worked with you many, many, many hours, and I have gained extraordinary, I've gained so much from you. I've gathered so many tools, lots of improvement in my relationships and communication practice through you. Your skill level's really high. Your heart is beautiful. You have an enormous heart with huge empathy for humanity, and you've worked with, you spent thousands of hours working with couples and individuals in the realm of relationship. So I just want to ask, Charles, as we close this call today, looking into your heart, what's something you want to say, you would say to individuals around this Valentine's season?
If you tell the truth to yourself, and yourself is the one person you should always be able to tell the truth with, if you tell the truth with yourself, your heart's going to guide you. And if what your heart really wants is to be in relationship, and you listen to your heart about that person is out there wanting you also. And if you tell the truth, what are the descriptors of this person? Where would they go? What do they like to do? Oh, I'll go there. You know, I like pickleball. I'd like to be with somebody who likes pickleball. I guess I'll go to pickleball. Oh, well, I always go to the pickleball in my town. Maybe I should go to pickleball in some other towns. If you tell the truth and listen to that truth. It will guide you to your beloved. It will guide you to the relationships that are fulfilling for you, whether you want a beloved relationship or whether you want a community fulfilling relationship. Just tell the truth. Writing it down seems to really make it more powerful.
Yeah.
Follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, believe in yourself. Believe in what's in there. And there's somebody that they're alive and they are looking for you too. They're not as perfect as they think they should be. You're not as perfect as you think you should be. You can be imperfect together, but love each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's beautiful, and it's coming from you, having worked with so many couples and individuals around relationship, it has a different kind of, you know, legitimacy to it. You've seen this stuff, you've worked it, and you've supported people to find the relationships they're looking for or to be okay not being in an intimate, you know, committed partnership. So I thank you so much for your work, your dedication to supporting people to be in the relationships they want to be in, or leaving relationships that really aren't serving them. You have a beautiful way of serving in the world, and I'm deeply grateful to you, Charles.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking the time to share this with people and all the other work that you do to bring that leaning into light to be something that's practical and available to people. And I can't imagine that people wouldn't have questions or concerns. How does this work, or what do you do in this situation? I would encourage people to get a hold of me at the charleslick.com and email me and ask me a question, and I will be happy to respond. Sometimes I get a little behind, but I will get to them and I will get answers to people. So if you're curious about something, if I can be helpful in some way, reach out and don't just, you know, let that be a stopping point. Ask for what you want. And I would look forward to hearing from people and being helpful in any way that I can.
Thank you, Charles. And thank you to you listeners for showing up on the call today. I trust you've found something helpful for yourself and perhaps for others. Perhaps there are people you know who are looking for relationship, committed partnership, or people who are on their own and they are struggling with the cultural pressure to be in a committed partnership. Maybe it's just not for them. So if you found something useful on the call today that you would like to share, I appreciate that a lot, because I'm not on social media right now, taking a break. And sharing this with other people is one way to show love and give the gift that matters. So you can find all the recorded interviews, conversations that are free for you to listen to. They're a gift at leaningintolight.com on our In Conversations page. And we also have a monthly newsletter that we send out, so you can sign up for that at leaningintolight.com. I'm Jessica Rios. I'm very grateful you came here today. Have a beautiful rest of your day.